Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
The Mincing Rascals are about to come your way. A kind of different Mincing Rascals. You'll hear why in just a minute. This is John Williams. Thanks for tuning in. Before we get to that, I want to remind you that I am leading a cruise to a trip to Paris. To France, actually. Here's what's going to happen. The folks from Kelly Cruises have invited my wife, Brenda. They've invited me, and they're inviting you to join us on a trip that will begin July 30th, 2019. So next July 30th. That will be the 75th anniversary of D-Day, of the invasion in Normandy. So what we're going to do is fly to Paris. We're going to spend 2 days in Paris in a lovely hotel by the Arc de Triomphe. And then we're going to get on Ama Waterways, Ama Lyra, one of those great river boats. And we're going to spend 7 nights cruising along the scenic Seine. It's just going to be remarkable. We'll get to Normandy after a few days. We'll get off and spend the day in Normandy. We'll be on the beaches. It just gives you goosebumps imagining this. And then we'll make a 3 or 4 day journey back to Paris. So about 3 days up and about 3 or 4 days back. We'll visit Monet's home and gardens in Giverny, Josephine and Napoleon's chateau. We'll stop in Rouen, the city of 100 bells chiming. And the nice thing about these trips is that it includes everything, right? So the trip is included. The tours are included. The excursions are included. Bike tours are included if you want to go on those. In fact, you can just tool off the boat on the bikes if you like and have a nice time on your own. The meals are included. The beer, the wine, the soda is included. Lunch, dinner, nightly entertainment. We're going to do some pre-dinner cocktail parties. It's Paris, up the Seine, to Normandy and back. Here's how you sign up. Call my friends at Kelly Cruises, 630-990-1111. And you know how they sometimes say, boy, the phones are ringing and the slots are filling up fast. They really are filling up fast. So get on board, 630-990-1111. They'll give you all the details at Kelly Cruises and kellycruises.com. Today is Thursday. It's June 14th, 2018. It is many things today, including Boy George's birthday, the President of the United States' birthday, and I think today is Flag Day, too, if I'm not mistaken. At 11:27 in the morning, this is John Williams, and this is The Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record at the studios at WGN Radio. If you think this is swell, and we do, we hope you'll join us Mondays through Fridays on WGN Radio. I'm on from 1 to 3, and I'm on Saturdays from 10 a.m. until noon.
I'm Eric Zorn, the disoriented columnist from the Tribune. And my column runs on Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays in your newspaper.
Meanwhile, Kristen McQuarrie, Scott Stantis, Steve Bertrand, Patty Vasquez, and Justin Kaufman all unavailable to join us today.
Yeah, they're apparently unavailable for comment.
Why are you disoriented today?
I'm disoriented because we had our first day at Tribune Tower, at the Prue. We left Tribune Tower last Friday, and I think we've spoken about that. And going to this new building, and it felt like the first day of school. I hadn't had this feeling since, like, you know, for more than 40 years. Walking into this building, I didn't know where my locker was. Literally, we had lockers, and I couldn't find my locker, and I got lost on the way to the building. Went way too far and had to double back, and I had to have my new desk, and I had to find the new supply cabinet, and it was very, very disorienting, very feeling like, wait a minute, am I just like stopping by someone's office here? And then today, I'm disoriented. I couldn't find this building. I wrote the address down. I thought, I know where that is.
Where we are now.
And I went the wrong way on Wacker, and I'm walking along going, well, wait a minute, this is 111. This can't be right. And Elif is waiting for me patiently in the lobby because I don't have an ID yet to get me up here, so... You know, it feels very new. Everything feels new. And at my age, to have something like this happening, it's kind of refreshing in a way.
Do you like your new teacher?
I like my new teacher and my new deskmates. It's funny, you know, I shared an office with Laura Weber, who is, you know, on the editorial board. And we had a nice, huge office, actually. They split us up. But it turns out that we're now sitting, because everyone's all jammed in, Laura and I are now sitting far closer than we were sitting before when we were sharing an office.
So, as are Elif and I in our new offices, too.
So did you have that feeling, too, when you came over here?
We touch elbows. Yes. Although I think to the person, the Tribune staff has reacted much more emotionally than the radio staff.
The other thing is I find that just even after we left, if they were to come to me tomorrow and say, hey, big mistake has been made, we're going to move you back to the tower next month, I don't know that I think that that would be a good thing. I think there was something psychologically good about leaving that building behind, about leaving the past behind. We're moving into this new digital future. Our newsroom, I don't know if you've seen any pictures of it. It's got, like, it looks like a sports bar. There's TVs everywhere, which we didn't have. Well, we did have some TVs, but now it really is, there's TVs everywhere. And the fact that we're sitting all close together, maybe that'll be good for the spirit of the newsroom, the news gathering itself, the process. I don't know. I'm a real open mind about it. And I went back the other day. I was on with Bill and Wendy on Monday, and my pass still worked for the tower. So I went up to the fourth floor where everything has been, like, just ripped apart. I took a video just walking around the ghost town of that newsroom. And I just thought, you know, it was sort of sad, but I was also feeling like, well, okay, you know, we've moved on, and it's probably time to move on. And you probably feel that way about the radio station. This is an incredible view we have here. And
we're all putting that platitude to test. Change is good. And people that say that often aren't having to change. But now we all are.
And speaking of changes and not changes, we wanted to talk about the petition of Pat Quinn saying that we should change our mayor every two terms, right?
The former governor was on our show the other day, the failed candidate for attorney general for the state of Illinois, Pat Quinn. I've been a fan of Pat Quinn's for a long time. Now he's taken on the Chicago mayor's office. He said it should be limited to two terms. And in the November ballot, he wants a binding referendum. He'll need 100,000 signatures on petitions to get the item on the ballot. And the ballot will ask if the mayor's office of Chicago should be limited to two terms. The incumbent is already served two terms. The election would follow that ballot initiative. So if it passes, Rahm could not run for re-election.
Well, there's some question about that. The mayor, the lawyers for Mayor Emanuel are saying that since the petition process will have already started for the next election, that the next election cycle will have begun, and therefore this initiative would only apply going forward. It would be an interesting legal question. I would expect that Emanuel might win that. But, you know,
it does seem to be pulling the rug out for under him a little bit, although I brought this very issue up with Mr. Quinn, and he's adamant that this would apply to February's mayoral race. But maybe a judge or a jury will have to decide that.
He is a lawyer. I am not a lawyer. You're not a lawyer. Elif is not a lawyer. But I think that my sense is that argument makes sense, not Quinn's argument, but that Mayor Emanuel's argument makes sense, which is that you're sort of changing the rules once the game has begun, and the game will have begun. Now, I mean, that's beyond the question. You sound like you're in favor of this idea.
Honestly, I'm not a Rahm Emanuel hater. I didn't know that we were getting too much Rahm, or that there's somebody out there whose ideas are so great, but for Rahm's money and incumbency, we're not going to get him. I would vote for Rahm Emanuel. I'm not anxious to vote against him. He's not Mayor Daley yet. His father. I don't think we've been living under an Emanuel dynasty. Where are you on that?
Well, I'm opposed to term limits. I'm really glad we have term limits for the president of the United States, because I think that Donald Trump's instinct would be to try to be president for life, and I don't think we want presidents for life. I feel like the old cliche is that we have a term limit and it's at the ballot box. People can vote people out if they don't want them in. And it's not a free ride. You know, when you have somebody who's experienced, people talk about, you know, the guys who are down in Springfield for 20 years. Well, those people, first of all, they are accountable. They're elected and they know how things work down there. And when you impose legislative term limits, for instance, what you end up doing, as people who study this find out, is that you end up ceding power to the lobbyists and the career bureaucrats and so on, the people who actually know how things get done. If people are not there long enough, then they don't have the experience, so they're relying much more on unelected people for guidance. So I'm not sure that there's any evidence that states or municipalities with term limits are any better governed, any more responsibly governed, that there's any real benefit to term limits. There's this, basically, there's this strain in the American political life of just throw the bums out. I think that contributed a great deal to Trump's election, which is people are just like, they want change. They want something new. Remember, Barack Obama ran just on change, and candidates always want to run on change. People are grumpy about the way things are. Things aren't good. And so they want things to change, and they want to blame the politicians who are in office for that. I get that. Sometimes it's totally valid. I just feel like if Mayor Emanuel continues to have the support of more than 50% of the voters in Chicago, then he ought to be able to continue to be mayor. And I don't see him hanging on to you know, power in a way that means that you just can't, you know, there's no other way to get him out than to term him out.
So. Well, Quinn's got 50,000 plus signatures.
I believe that if he gets 100,000, that the referendum would pass.
Yeah, and I don't know that he won't get 100,000 signatures. Maybe they'll fight the signatures, but really, if I'm Rahm Emanuel, I take this very seriously.
I tell you what term limits I'm in favor of also is legislative leadership term limits. That sounds nerdy, but what that means is that you have people like Mike Madigan who've been Speaker of the House for, 35 of the last 37
years. It's gross.
Years.
Madigan should, out of good conscience, just cede the seat to somebody else.
Right.
I mean, for the same reason it's good for you guys to move to a new building, new blood.
Because, you need new blood. And the thing is that these leadership positions are called from people who are experienced. And if you have like a 10-year, so if you're going to be the House Majority Leader, you can be the House Majority Leader for 10 years. Or if you're going to be the Speaker of the House. Or
the
if you're
FBI
going to be Minority Leader.
The FBI chief is a 10-year position. Isn't that interesting?
I think in some cases that would be a good idea.
One term.
And the thing about legislative leadership is that we don't vote for them. People bring this up about Madigan a lot. It's like, who votes for Mike Madigan? Well, all the legislators together, and we elect them. But once you elect your state rep, that person is in a real bind, because if you go down to Springfield and don't vote for Mike Madigan, who's going to win, then Mike Madigan might not take your calls, might not move your bills, might not meet with you, and so or help you out. So there's all kinds of incentives, and voters are just completely cut out of that.
How about this letter? This is from a congressman from Illinois. They sent it to President Trump. It was the Republican congressional delegation. So we talked to Dan LaHood from downstate Illinois in Peoria, the 18th congressional district, about this the other day. They sent a letter to the president. And they said, don't let Blah go out early. That here are his crimes. Here's why we impeached him. Here's what he did. Here's what he tried to do. I recommend that you read this letter. We'll put a link, but you can Google it too. The congressional delegation from Illinois, the Republicans, letter to Donald Trump about Rod Blagojevich's prison sentence, because it's a 2.5-page summary of what he did and what he tried to do. It's succinct. It's a nice little encapsulation. I've long said, we've had this conversation on this podcast a lot lately, that Rod Blagojevich's 14 years were too long. He's at 7 now?
No, 6 years and 3 months or something like that.
Okay, so he's approaching his 7th year.
It's on my calendar in my wall. So.
I think, and if somebody said he could get out at 7 or 8, you know my take on this, I think he should be let out. But not for the reasons that Donald Trump wants to let him out, not because he's got his own agenda. But the letter reminds us that if we let him out now, that would be less than the minimum sentencing requirements for the crimes for which he was convicted, right? So if the president does that, it really does thumb its nose at justice and consequences. And the more I talked to LaHood about this, the more I thought, the guy's making a good case here. Maybe Rod should stay in jail a little longer.
It's a good point. And the thing is that you want these sentences to be strong because you really want to dissuade other politicians from doing the same kind of things that he has done. I mean, the deterrent effect of a good long sentence
is zero. Is zero.
I'm not sure it's
zero. We've sent 4 governors to jail out of 7. Blagojevich didn't know that when he started to shake down the hospital.
It was kind of ironic. Some of the stuff he was doing was going on while former Governor Ryan was on trial.
Yeah.
So it's like the old story that, they used to have hang pickpockets in London, and people would go to the hangings to watch the hangings, and the pickpockets would go to the hangings while people were distracted. They would pickpockets. So
if you want to hang these people, if you want to keep them in jail, fine. But let's not kid ourselves that that's going to solve the problem, because it ain't going to fix the problem.
No, it isn't. I think there's a certain anger at Blagojevich for the way he behaved
after
he was arrested and his refusal to apologize. And I've certainly spoken about that. I did a column last week where I talked about another reason to keep Blagojevich locked up a little while longer is that when he was governor, governors in Illinois, like most states, have the power of executive clemency, which is when someone says, I was falsely convicted, or much more often, I was convicted of a felony back in 1979, and I can't get a job. Can you expunge my record? It was I sold a lid of marijuana or something like that. And so this is what the contours of mercy of the justice system allow for. And what happened when Blagojevich was governor was these. What happens in Illinois is people go to the Illinois Prisoner Review Board. They hear the case, and then the Illinois Prisoner Review Board makes a confidential recommendation to the governor, and the governor acts on that recommendation. Well, Blagojevich refused to act on most of them, and so these petitions on his desk grew to 3,000. He had to be sued by Cabrini-Green Legal Aid. The state legislature had to pass a law saying, if the governor's ignored you for a certain amount of time, you're allowed to go to the courts.
He was lazy. Blago was lazy. He didn't go to work a lot of days. He stayed at home. He was wearing his tracksuit in his office.
He had to jog. Jogging was really good around his house.
I cut you off. You don't agree with me on that.
No. I don't think it was laziness. I think it was political cowardice. That when you act on one of these petitions, if you decline it, you're going to make people mad, right? And if you okay it, then you risk the Willie Horton problem, right? You say, look at Blagojevich, he let this guy out of prison, or he erased his criminal record, and he went on to get a job in a school where he did something terrible to kids, or he murdered somebody. So it's risky. I mean, that power is risky. It's this weapon you're holding, and so he just put the weapon down. He didn't act. So there are a lot of family people talk about. Well, Patty Blagojevich and her daughters, and I feel sorry for her daughters, extremely in this case for what they've been through. There are a lot of people who are out there who couldn't get jobs, who were in mm-hmm. prison, needed to get mm-hmm. out. They had families, and Blagojevich took their petitions, and he said, I can wait on this. So my proposed solution was, let's let him wait.
Karma's a bitch?
A couple of years. Karma says we should wait a couple of years and then look at it. Now, all the bets are off because Trump is so impulsive. A pardon means you didn't do anything wrong. I mean, this is what Bill Clinton did for Mark Rich, and I mean all the other things that have happened. But it's what Trump did for Jack Johnson.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that.
Which he should have done. I mean, I can't figure out why Barack Obama didn't do that.
It's what he wants to do for Muhammad Ali, except that it's already happened.
He doesn't really need it, and it's what I fear that he's going to do. And he can do it. He can almost do a blanket pardon for everybody who's involved in this Russia investigation. And yeah. I can see it. I can see him saying all these people who've been swept up by Robert Mueller in this investigation that Trump's just going to say they're all pardoned because this is a witch hunt, and people will be furious, and they'll sputter and rage, and Trump supporters will be thrilled because he will have stuck it to the liberals, and then we'll all move on because Trump will do something astoundingly bizarre, like claiming during the election, he said that during the 2016 election, parents of Korean War victims, soldiers who died in the Korean War, were coming up to him saying they wanted their sons' bodies repatriated.
Oh, that was why he threw that into the Singapore summit?
Yeah, but think about this. The Korean War ended in 1953, I believe, which means that anybody who died in that war was probably born in like the early 30s, which means that their parents had to have been born about 10 to 15. So what he's saying is that centenarians were hobbling up to him and saying this to him. I don't believe it for a second. I mean, it's like, he just lied. He just made it up. And so anyway, I'm digressing, but Trump will say or do something bizarre and strange, and our attention will be turned, and we'll go, yeah, remember when he pardoned everybody who was implicated? Because it looks like, it looks like Mueller's closing in on, it looks like Cohen is losing his lawyers and might have to.
It gets complicated with Cohen because Cohen is Trump's lawyer, but Cohen has lawyers helping him with his own problems, and now he's separated from those lawyers. So you're three generations of lawyers removed.
Well, he's facing some serious time, and so is Manafort. And I'm guessing that these guys are just hanging on right now, hoping that they're going to get pardoned.
Right.
And they're waiting and waiting. And Manafort, I think his parole may be revoked. Is that right? Is that what's going on this week? And he may end up actually behind bars. And I don't know how long he's going to hold out. I think he's an older guy, right? He's like 70 or something.
Yeah, Manafort's over 70.
So
President's 72 today.
So yeah, happy birthday to him. And boy George.
Is it too late to, score this summit? A little time and distance is sometimes good. What do you think of it?
Well, it looks to me like we didn't get anything except the same sort of vague assurance that North Koreans are interested in denuclearizing the Korean Peninsula. And they've said that over and over again for the last 30, 40 years, right? They've made promises and pledges and we're going to do this, and they never do. And in return, they got us to stop the military exercises with South Korea. And they got a really nice little promotional video that the Trump...
Yeah, you saw that.
I did.
By Destiny Pictures.
History is always evolving. And there comes a time when only a few are called upon to make a difference. But the question is, what difference will the few make?
This is just the same sort of thing. We talk about trivial, but I'm going to just go to this tangent for a second. It's always bothered me that Donald Trump uses bad grammar and spelling. It bothers me that we get Theresa May's name misspelled on official documents, and that the White House just doesn't, the Education Department just doesn't seem to have their stuff together. And I know these are the kind of mistakes that all of us are guilty of, but none of us are the White House. None of us are representing the United States. So I think these details matter. I want them to get it right. So literally when the president says that Robert De Niro, who dropped an F-bomb on the president during the Tony Awards, is a low IQ guy, in that tweet, he misspelled T-O and T-O-O. He didn't use two and two correctly. That stuff bothers me. For reasons that must seem elitist and trivial, right? Some people speculate that he actually does that on purpose just to rile people like me up and to make other people feel like he's one of them.
It's very hard to believe that some of the stuff is intentional.
So then they say, okay, we're going to make this promotional movie trailer in a world where the sun rises five times. Wouldn't it be great if North Korea joined the countries of the world and all of a sudden the lights come on the map of North Korea and you see industry and technology, and it's sort of a buddy-buddy vision of what it would be like if the United States and North Korea were pals. And it was very flattering to Kim Jong-un. And they showed it to him, and they showed it to the press. They did a Korean version and an American version. But they said Destiny Pictures presents, the idea being that this is our destiny together. But there really is a Destiny Pictures in Hollywood, California. And they really didn't make this movie. And their phone was really ringing the next day.
I didn't hear that part.
And
that's great.
CEO of Destiny Pictures is like, holy crap, what happened? He said, I'm pedaling as fast as I can, try and stay in front of this thing and try and fix what happened here. What happened here? So eventually, it wasn't the State Department, but the agency of the federal government that produced this put out an announcement saying Destiny Pictures of Hollywood, California didn't have anything to do with this. Would it have killed them to just go, hey, let's just make sure, because we're not going to call it Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Presents.
Let's Google Destiny
just
Pictures
Destiny
and
Pictures.
See what comes
click.
Up.
That's all you got to do. And they go, oh, hey, there is a Destiny Pictures, so let's call it Future World Vision Pictures. Come up with something. But no, that's too much
They
work.
Clearly put a lot of effort. That was a well-produced trailer.
Well, right? The guy from Destiny Pictures had a lot of problems with it. He goes, well, it's 4 minutes. It should be two. It's redundant. Five sunsets, really? He said, but I thought it was well edited.
I mean, first of all, we do know that Kim is addicted to pop culture.
Yeah,
he's really,
right.
And that's why it all explains the whole Dennis Rodman thing.
But it's a propaganda film. This is a state propaganda film
sure.
that we produce.
I'm sure, but it is exactly the sort of thing that a real estate magnate would suggest to somebody if you're trying to seduce them into changing their ways. Now, I mean, in some ways it makes some sense to say, hey, look, you've got this country; it's well situated in the world to be a modern economy. And you've got your people under your, this doesn't say this, but you've got your people living, in squalor, basically, in this, and you can, if you just play ball with us and join the community of nations, you can have this incredible place that's
right.
A resort and a booming economy.
And you imagine that Kim Jong-un is juvenile enough, is vain enough, that this Hollywood treatment of him would really stroke his ego, that might work on some level. Maybe he's like, we got to get rid of the nukes because they're going to make a movie out of me. I swear to God, if I just turn my heart, the world will be better and they'll make a movie about me. But I wouldn't have shown it to the American press because I don't go here very often. Imagine if Barack Obama said, hey, we're going to put all of our glorious American flags, flag by flag, next to the flags of North Korea. And we're going to give him the treatment that we would give an ally. In fact, we're going to give him better treatment. We're going to crap on our allies. We're going to have our spokespeople say that there's a special place in hell for some of our allies, even if we walk that back later. And then we're going to give this guy, we're going to leave the meeting with our allies early to go meet with this guy. And we're going to put the flags up there, and we're going to do a fawning video for him, and we're not going to get anything out of it. Imagine if the Democrats did that.
Well, you almost don't have to imagine this because they've shown these side-by-side clips of Sean Hannity several years ago when Obama was talking about this, about going over to North Korea, and and about how terrible this is, what an innocent naif he is, and how this is just the worst capitulation, and this is not America that we know, and now how they're just thrilled with it now. You know, the truth is that the Republicans just lost their minds when they believed that Obama was bowing his head when he shook hands with Arab leaders. Like, he goes and he bows to terrorists. And now this doesn't bother them. This guy with this wretched, horrible human rights record. And they confronted Trump about this. They said, you know, he kills people. He and Trump says, you know, his people love him. His people are in fear of him. He loves his people. Well, how could he love his people? He murders them.
He jails whole families when one of them commits a crime.
And the crime is something like having a radio that you can turn the knob and actually tune other stations.
Watch a soap opera from South Korea, and your grandparents will go to jail with you.
Yeah, I mean, this is a horrible man, and it's a horrible country. And his cozying up to them while he's, of course, you know, giving the finger to Canada. I mean, it's just preposterous. And the idea that the Republican Party has sold its soul to this guy. He has a higher approval rating among Republicans than Reagan did, than any of the Bushes did. Republicans love this guy. And I think part of it is they love him because of how much we hate him.
I think that's good.
He yanks chains, and they love to see.
They love to see us dance.
They love it.
But here's the mistake I think you make with that statement. I don't think Republicans love Trump. I think Trump lovers love Trump. You and I know a lot of Republicans who are embarrassed by this guy and who are happy that the economy is doing whatever it's doing, but they don't love this guy. They're embarrassed. And we're going to get through this. There's a lot of Republicans.
Well, Kristen, who's not here, is I think she probably wouldn't mind if I called her a Republican. She's certainly a conservative.
Scott Stannis is a conservative, and Scott does not have good things to say.
And Kristen do not love Trump. They do not like Trump. They're embarrassed by Trump. And I consider them to be, you know, solid Midwestern conservative. I mean, they're not ultra conservative in all ways, but they are of Republican stock. And I respect them both a great deal. I like them both a great deal. And I admire that they I believe both of them are principled people. And I think a lot of Republicans may be principled people behind closed doors, but they saw what happened to Mark Sanford, for instance, the congressman in South Carolina, the former governor, who stepped out of line just a little bit. I mean, he was voting with Trump like 90% of the time, right? And then he lost his primary last week because Trump went after him in part. And because he suggested at some point that Trump tone it down, and he was.
Well, I'm not speaking about politicians when I say not all Republicans love Trump,
right.
But Trump lovers love Trump. I don't know how politicians particularly or individually are. I am disappointed that only Jeff Flake, John McCain. There's a handful of them that are regularly speaking out about the president's lunacy.
I'm blanking on the name of the guy who gave the rip snorting speech the other day in the Senate.
Corker.
Corker, that's right.
Thank you, Olive. But there just aren't enough of those. And I think there are instances where this is easy for me to say because I don't vote Republican typically and I'm not a fan of the president. But I think there are plenty of instances where these Republican politicians could stand up and say, Mr. President, that was beneath the dignity of the United States. He came back from Singapore and said, the enemy of the United States is the press. He's the fake news. That's the mainstream media. And the mainstream media is flawed. But North Korea is an enemy. Russia is an enemy. The press is not the enemy.
Is the loyal opposition to him, I think, right now in a lot of cases. That you've got this party that is... publicly is just embracing this man and is not standing up to him. And you like to think that if who would be Rosie O'Donnell? I mean, who would be a similar sort of celebrity president?
Oprah,
Robert De Niro.
I mean, Alec Baldwin.
Oprah. Well, no, Alec Baldwin might be a good example. Although I think Alec Baldwin's fairly cerebral. I mean, I know he's but someone who's like a little unhinged became president, but was basically espousing things that the left wanted done. Would the left, be careful as to what they endorsed about and what they didn't, fearing that they would, say, be eating their own young if they...
Don King.
All right. Al Sharpton.
You know, Sharpton was also on my mind as you were doing that. I thought, well, if you want to just take somebody who's on the left and seems to have been able to fashion a legitimate image of himself, you could sure say Al Sharpton.
Or Michael Moore, too. I mean, he's a very polarizing guy, too.
Yeah, I think Moore is a little more cerebral than some
celebrities,
of the ones.
Some of those actors who are
Barbara Streisand, who are some of the... Are you looking for strident celebrities on the left?
Yeah.
Which is redundant. Let me think. And you want that? You want what you're trying to find,
like,
is
Sean Penn, okay,
on the left, the moral equivalent of Donald Trump,
yeah,
to the right.
Would it be like Sean Penn?
Would we disown them? Would we gang up on them? That's what you're asking. Right?
Yeah, or would we? Yeah, would we be very careful when we stood with him and when we kept our distance?
I guess we wouldn't know who that is. Say it's Sean Penn or Alec Baldwin until they got into that office, and then we realized, oh my God! But none of them, I don't think, would have campaigned that way, because I'm trying to think of who said such outlandish things, even as private citizens, that Trump did. You kind of saw Trump coming. He was consistent as a citizen, as a candidate, and as a president. He's only doubled down, right? He's only become more
That's
Trumpian.
True. That is true.
So who is it today on the left? This is just an exercise you can. You can text, call, or put it on our Facebook page. Who is today the moral equivalent that could get the votes, that is smart enough and cagey enough, but also crazy enough to be terrifying on the left? And would the left then disown that person as they became more and more powerful?
Or be someone who tends not to criticize him. I mean, I'm wondering, you look at Barack Obama is not this way, right? I mean, Barack Obama is a bad example, but I do know that there is a tendency on the left, and maybe go back to Bill Clinton, where, you know, we did circle the wagons. I think the left did circle the wagons when Clinton was involved in the Lewinsky scandal. It was, you know, the kind of behavior that if he had been a conservative Republican, we might have been howling for his head. And instead, we circled the wagons on him and tried to, you know, protect his presidency.
And I
look back on that, and I wish, in retrospect, that in 1998, which is when this was all going down, that he had resigned and Al Gore had taken over and been able to run as an incumbent on the strength of the pretty strong economic record that he had, instead of having to distance himself.
Right, Gore couldn't use him then.
But at the same time, at the time, I was thinking, well, I'll be damned if I'm going to let these Republicans in their sexually tinged witch hunt run this guy out of office for having a failed
really?
An urge.
Well, that's very honest of you. That's very considerate of you.
It was somewhat tribal, I have to say.
So you see the hypocrisy of your ways.
I do. I think that there's some there. I have to be honest about that. I have to think, like, do I hold people who I agree with to the same standards that I hold people with whom I don't agree? I mean, it's hard to do that. We're all human, right? We all have... alliances and allegiances and feelings that are tinged by that kind of stuff. But
let's do our recommendations. And by the way, your little speech there plays very nicely into a book. It's called Bad Stories. Hey, Olaf, who wrote Bad Stories? By Steve Almond. The subtitle of it is What the Hell Just Happened in America? And it's about the election. And by the way, you know who he's really mad at? The FBI. He's mad at NPR. He's mad at the New York Times. He's also really mad at Republicans and Donald Trump. And trust me, this is a book that the president won't like. But if you think it's just a screed from the left about we're right and they're wrong, it is not. He has a very good worldview of this thing.
Oh, that sounds really good.
And it's very contemporaneous. I mean, it reads like he wrote it yesterday. Bad Stories, I'm recommending.
I'm going on vacation. I'm going to the airport right after this. So maybe I'll download it as an audiobook. It sounds like it.
I have a copy in my office. I will give it to you, and I want a full report on my desk when you get back.
Oh, you haven't read it yet?
No, I have the copy of it. I'll give you my copy.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I've already annotated it, so you'll know where the good parts are. You can
Excellent.
Think more than once about the things
John's
that I've...
John's going to ask me about this. I better read it.
This will be on the test.
Right.
What are you recommending this week?
I'm recommending... You know who Malcolm Gladwell is, right? He writes for The New Yorker.
Well, you recommended 2 weeks ago his third and fourth episodes of the second season on Brian Williams.
I did?
Yes, you did.
How could I possibly? I only listened to that like a week ago.
We talked about it on this radio show. We talked about it on the radio, and the only reason I got it was from you.
Huh.
No?
I don't think so.
Who else would have recommended that to
Somebody
me?
Somebody else might have.
Okay, well, go ahead and recommend episodes three and four of Malcolm Williams.
Well, I'm sure I didn't. Malcolm Gladwell. I'm sure that because I listened to it last Saturday. So so if I recommended it in advance, but whoever recommended it those episodes to you was spot on. It's all about memory and lying. And you, since you've talked about this on your radio show, then you know it's a defense of Brian Williams and says that his memory is. We all have fallible memories, and it's a. It's a compelling, he makes a compelling case that Brian Williams just made a human, has a human failing. But since you've already had that.
Yeah, but by the way, you know what? It was, we talked about it on the radio show. It wasn't on the podcast. My Saturday producer, Griffin, told me about it. He said, you know how you are always defending Brian Williams' faulty memory as being an honest, legitimate biological phenomenon? Wait till you hear Malcolm Gladwell. So Griffin listened to it first.
It was Griffin.
Griffin
okay.
tipped me off. All and right. you're All seconding right. that
so I'm
recommendation.
I'm totally seconding that recommendation.
Pardon me, but I just want you. So your memory on this is better than
my
mine.
My memory is right. I am sure that I didn't do this. So actually, that's a very...
How ironic.
It's a very... holistic recommendation here. But yeah, Malcolm Gladwell's podcasts are compelling. He often starts off sort of mild, and he wanders into stories in the, sort of a shaggy dog way. And then by the end, he's up on his high horse, yeah. just wagging his finger at you. And it's really interesting, and it's very well produced. So I recommend it. It's Revisionist History, Malcolm Gladwell, on iTunes. Same place you find your Mincing Rascals.
Woman called in on the show the other day about that episode, Eric, and she said, I'm so glad that Gladwell did that, because anybody over the age of 32 more and more finds themselves misremembering things. It's more than that, though. But, you know, I think if when you hear this, you realize, A, maybe Brian Williams got a bad shake, and somebody else told me, no, he didn't, but having listened to the entire two episodes, but at least you know you're not alone if you don't know if your memory of something is the correct one.
It's a fascinating set of episodes.
Eric Zorn, nice to visit with you.
Good to see you.
Krista McCreary, sorry you couldn't make it. Steve Bertrand, sorry you couldn't make it. Justin Coffin, sorry you couldn't make it.
Patty Vasquez, sorry you couldn't make it.
Scott Santis, sorry you couldn't make it.
Steve Bertrand, sorry you couldn't make it.
I'm glad Eric made it.
Yeah, somebody made it. He's been here monologue the whole time with that.
It's been produced by Elif Garris. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.